Bonneville International Corporation, or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. Well, it's the fifth anniversary of the show. 5 years. Never thought we could make it that long, but thanks for everybody listening. Thanks for the agencies for hiring us. And in the studio, special thanks. I don't know, which came first, Ann or Tammy?
Tammy did.
Tammy?
Tammy is or was.
And then Ann.
Shortly after.
And then we were off
to the... I think Ann was related, but not part of NITP. We knew her back then.
And then we were off to the races. John joined us. Of course, Mike goes way back.
I was here when they built the building.
I mean, you were kind enough to invite us on your radio show, and Tammy and I went on. I was scared to death. I don't know if you were, Tammy. You probably
were. Oh, my
weren't.
Gosh. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't even talk. I was so nervous.
I had 4 hours sleep the first night I was going for Mike's show.
We were about
ago.
To become celebrities, we thought.
Anyway, and to the 40-some people that make this company hum, thank you. And again, if it wasn't for the agencies, nobody'd be humming. So thank you, thank you. And this is our way to pay y'all back. Anyway, it's For Your Benefit, fifth anniversary show, and we've asked some of the speakers to write in some of the fun questions they had or pointed questions that they had. As well, you can talk to us. We've got Mike Causey, John Elliott, Tammy Flanagan, and Ann Vinson. I think we've introduced them in the 5 years enough so that you would know who they are. But we are at 202-465-3080. First question or memory of a great question comes from Mark Levine. He's an attorney with Handler and Levine. He does wills, estates, and estate planning, et cetera. But he had a pretty good question. He says, favorite seminar question. Does any of this apply to me if I am immortal? and Mark's got a good sense of humor, but I'm sure this question was asked in humor. And he goes, no. But there are some people from other branches of the government who may want a word with you. So that was good. And then he had tips and advice for the coming year. He says flexibility in estate planning. With the uncertainty of the federal estate tax, although it's a little bit more clear now, but we don't know how clear it's going to be after 2 years, many states considering adding or changing their own estate laws. So, in other words, the federal might not impact too many people because the threshold is $5 million for a single person and $10 million for joint for at least 2 years anyway. Many states, though, are looking to raise revenues and aren't going to follow that $5 million and $10 million. So, when you hear these huge numbers, think about your state as well. And there's just too many states, but around here, there's two states that don't come anywhere near that. And somebody still might be taxed at the estate level and not otherwise recognize it. And then Mark says for his own two cents, thanks for NITP for the show and the opportunity to reach so many people as well as the seminars. Mark is a genuine, sharp cookie. Now we had another one, long-term care, Tom Bevington. He's the manager of public and community relations with Long-Term Care Partners, and Tom's been on the show many times. We saw Joan Melanson last week at the Shaw Bransford holiday party. And great folks, great product. And he says, I've done some best of, and he has two issues, or two best of points. He says, this is a question he gets from class now. What is long-term care and what does it do? And the answer is a little long. He says, to answer the question at the most basic level, long-term care insurance buys the kind of care you need if you lost the ability to care for yourself, basic things like bathing, dressing, etc. And he goes on and he said, that's why I think long-term care insurance is a retirement planning tool. It's not something that everyone needs, but it is something that everyone should consider because having some sort of plan for paying long-term care is vital. Now, of course, Tom most likely will be on a show in not the distant future, and then you can have him one-on-one. And then there's a second question he felt was very common, and it says, when should I consider long-term care insurance? And I think that is a good question, because one would say the younger you are, you get it at a lower premium, but you pay it at a longer time. And Tom has a way to cut through all that and get at the heart of it. And he goes, there's an easy answer and a more nuanced one. The easy answer is you buy long-term care when you're around 55. By that time, most people's retirement planning is advanced enough so that they can make intelligent decisions about the need for coverage, but they're not so old that the premiums are unaffordable. The longer answer is that you need to do it when it makes sense for you. And then he goes through that. So, again, we have...
Yeah, I have a comment on that one, because in my humble opinion, I think a lot of people buy long-term care insurance when they have it in their family as a need. And you figure when you're 55, many of us would have parents 75 or 85, which they may be going through long-term care situations. So when we see what they're going through, we say, oh, what's going to happen in 30 years when we're in that same boat?
Exactly.
Maybe we better do something about it at this point. So I think that's the age where it hits people that they really might have a need for it.
I would absolutely agree. My mother-in-law is in long-term care, has no insurance, and, of course, couldn't get it. But she has in-home care almost 24/7, 27 anyway. And so that's about as expensive, if not more, than a nursing home. So the money is going, and if she survives two or three more years, the money's gone, and then, of course, it's Medicaid.
Yeah, you want to see your assets dwindle more than the stock market crash of 2008. Start paying for long-term care.
Yeah.
It'll go about $100,000 a year.
I don't know what Medicaid situations are in Southeast Florida. They may be better than other places because there's so many elderly there, but we're going to find out.
And, yeah, but state tax revenues are in dire straits right now.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. So it's that convinced us to get long-term care insurance, and we look at it as a gift to our children.
Exactly.
Well, you know, there's a way to hold a mirror up to this, too. I got my long-term care insurance 20 years ago, and I wish I had doubled the benefit and all that sort of thing. But the company that I purchased it through no longer handles long-term care insurance. We're frozen in time, but they're not taking any new people. And if you look at the companies that used to offer long-term care insurance, there were dozens of them, and now there are about four.
Right.
And the reason they're only that many is because the insurance carriers have found that this is a really expensive thing to them. People are living much longer because of medical
advances. They're actually using it.
They're using it, exactly. And, I mean, that's a lesson for people who don't have it, that you better get it because experience has shown.
For a lot of us with life insurance, we cancel our policies before we die.
Yeah.
But with long-term care insurance, you're going to pay for that.
Yeah. And hope you never use it. Yeah. Hope you never use it.
Exactly.
It's kind of like fire insurance for the house.
Exactly.
Auto insurance.
Yeah, but the risk of using this is greater than any of those.
Okay, now Tom has a very dry wit, so those of you all listening, while you might not know Tom, outstanding person, but the last comment, he says, I'd also like to include the question we got on the first show I ever appeared on here, and he says, can I enroll my dog in it? And he says, but that wouldn't be too illuminating, most wisely.
So that's most a reflection likely. Of our listeners that they
no,
care about their dog.
I think it's
well,
a reflection of John's friend that called about the dog, the EPA guy.
He needs long-term care for his dog.
Yeah. Ears.
Well, it's a serious issue because our dog recently had a seizure for the first time. She's 13. And we just spent about $1,300, $1,400 just for some tests. So
can't leave her alone.
You can buy pet health insurance, no?
Yeah.
We're not going to do it, but you can. Yes, I understand you can.
But not
and as Mark Levine, getting back to good old Mark, he pointed out that you can actually set up a trust for
your pet
because if you die and there's
someone to
nobody
care for it.
Somebody funds to care for your pet.
And of course,
if
the pet were to pass early, that person caring for the dog shouldn't get the money, otherwise they'll do the dog in, or cat, or pet.
Yeah, you got to be careful with the.
So, in other words, the residual, if the pet was to die early, should go to SPCA or something like
yes.
that, and not to the
That's
individual.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Not that
yeah.
anybody.
Well, my dog
anything.
Was thrilled to hear Mark's take on that.
Your dog was thrilled.
Yeah, but then I pointed out the other members of the family would be in line first. But
Okay, we got a couple of financial planners that weighed in. Ed kind of wears three hats. He's a financial planner, he's a tax planner, and he lectures on benefits as well. And Joe Sullender, he's vice president with Wells Fargo. And Ed is, he's his own, on his own. But his first question is, and I think it's a question that I would ask, or a lot of other people would ask, how much money will I need in order to retire comfortably? Now, when you get a question like that in class, you don't know anything about the person answering it, but he sometimes, you can reverse it and kind of say, well, what do you spend? And are you going into debt? So if your bring home pay is X, and you're spending more than that, then besides spending too much, then you know what you need to live on. Of course, when you're retiring, and I'm sure you all would remind me of this, that you won't have all the withholdings necessarily that you do while on the job. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. All the things you pay for retirement, you no longer have to pay for.
Yeah, that's true. Like 8.5% roughly is not coming out of your annuity. That is 7% plus 1.5% or so for Medicare tax. But then, of course, if you get full survivor benefits, that kind of cancels that out. But then most people, the vast majority of people, even in CERS, contribute significantly to the thrift savings plan. Of course, that's a big chunk of money, maybe the biggest chunk of money. And that, of course, can't come out of your annuity. So, yeah, the net-to-net comparison is almost always more favorable. And I would add that if you're under CSRS and you're sitting on 35 years of service or more, you have enough money to retire. That's it.
Whether you know it or not.
Yeah, whether you know it or not. I had somebody in a seminar who had 36 years under CSRS, and I was mentioning the net-to-net comparison. So at lunch, he went back to his office, did some calculations. He came back in the afternoon and said, you know, I'm working for less than minimum wage.
Exactly.
I'm out of here. I think he finished the afternoon. But
yeah, I have a friend I'm trying to convince of that. She's got almost 38 years of service with her sick leave added on, and she says, I can't retire yet because my daughter, I'm still paying off college. I'm like, you could retire and go get a second job and pay it off quicker. But she hasn't figured that out yet.
Yeah,
it's a safety net, too, I suppose. You know, here you are. Anyway.
No, I think she likes the travel. The government pays her,
yeah,
her
and
trips
again,
around the
that's
world.
The other component.
They like their jobs.
Yeah, if you like your job, regardless of what the finances are, you may be easily financially able to retire, but that's, you've only considered half of it. The other half is, you know, what are the pros and cons of retiring? What am I going to miss? Maybe even draw a list of pros and cons, write it out and say, you may decide, hey, it's not time to retire.
Now, to help with retirement, I'm just going to take a little segue into the change in the tax law that's going to take effect January 1st. I'm sure folks have heard about this, quote, payroll tax holiday, where an employee, if they are paying into Social Security, would have it reduced 2%, not the Social Security, but the amount that they put in. Now, they don't get that money now because it's withheld, correct? So people are saying, gee, I'm going to get 2% more in my paycheck, which they would get, but why take it? Put it into the thrift if you haven't maxed the thrift out, because then you create a deduction out of something that wasn't deductible, and it helps you in the long run. You're going to get the money. I know this is contrary to what Congress wants us to do with it. Or if you're fully maxed out on the thrift and you haven't put money into an IRA, not that you can deduct the IRA, you may not be able to, but at least put something in. And maybe it's only 2 years, but 2 years over a long period of time is nice. And Tammy, I emailed Tammy last week, and I said, is this a ploy to cut the amount of money that somebody would qualify to get in Social Security benefits by cutting the tax? And you very politely said, no.
Well, no, but I still wonder, you know, the theory behind cutting the payroll tax, because then if you have to raise it back to 6.2%, is that considered a tax increase?
Oh, it will be.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it will be.
So we're going to keep it at low. And
whether
it
is or it isn't, it will be.
Yeah, I think there's more to this that we don't know. We're going to listen and watch this closely. And the other thing we don't know is how it's going to affect CSRS employees, because apparently they still have to pay the full 7% to CSRS, even though the FERS employees will get a 2% reduction. And we're still questioning those under CSRS offset. Will they get a reduction, or will the difference go to civil service? So check your first paycheck in the new year very closely.
John, you had some thoughts on that, didn't you, the offset?
Well, I got an email from someone who was offset and said, well, she thinks she might not get the 2% break, because, yes, she'll get a 2% reduction in her FICA tax to 4.2, but then they'll make her pay 2.8%.
Because technically she's still CSRS.
She's CSRS and under CSRS rules. I said, that's an excellent question. OPM hasn't published anything yet, but if I had to guess, I would say, yeah, unfortunately, unlike your FERS friends, you're probably not going to get a reduction in your total retirement contributions. That's my speculation.
Yeah, okay. It'll be an interesting year when it comes to things like that.
Now, Ed brought up, Ed does tax work as well and lectures on tax with us, and I get the same question because I lecture on tax, and when you get in, we talk about state taxation, and invariably the question is, what's the best state to retire to? And it's very simple. It's Alaska, and that kind of ends the discussion.
Yeah.
And they go, why Alaska? And I said, no state income tax, no sales tax, and they pay you to live there.
That's right.
But we don't see a mass migration of retirees to Alaska.
Well, a Big Mac costs $7.50 there.
Yeah, try finding a dentist.
Alaska's a very expensive place to live.
Or a doctor who takes health insurance.
Yeah.
And anyway, so then in our book, we list every state in the country that has a special benefit to being retired in that state. Either no state income tax, they don't tax the annuities, or there's a partial exclusion. So it's not necessarily that easy, and it's clearly not necessarily just a state that doesn't have a state income tax, because they've got to make it somewhere else, or a state that doesn't tax the pension. I mean, Massachusetts, not to pick on Massachusetts, New York and Pennsylvania each don't tax pensions, annuities.
Well, after watching 60 Minutes last night, which was about state bankruptcy, heading towards bankruptcy, and a lot of states are just in dire straits, and they're not able to pay their bills. So I think I'd be looking for the state that's in the least of that poverty level whenever I'd be
back to Alaska.
Back to Alaska.
They've got the oil.
That's right.
A few years ago, I think it was NARF magazine, said, taking everything into consideration, Tennessee was the cheapest state.
That's not a bad state. They got Smoky Mountains. They got Nashville and Memphis.
Chattanooga's a nice city.
I don't know if that's still true, but it's certainly up there.
The income tax is very simple. It's dividends and interest. Yeah. They don't tax anything else, and it's not a high tax. And the cost of living is low, and there are urban areas that would provide you the health care the culture, if you like country music.
I was going to say, I'm all for it. I'll go.
You know, though, years ago, a financial planner, I mean, this is 20 years ago, told me, he said, this is particularly true of men, but he said, make all your financial decisions before you hit an arbitrary age. I think he said 70. But because he said after that, men particularly go nuts, and they to the exclusion, they want to avoid paying taxes to the exclusion of everything else. And I have this example of a friend. He worked for the GSA, career employee. Kind of a couch potato guy, not an active person at all. He decided to retire to Washington State, and I tried to envision him out, you know, catching salmon and hiking on the trails. I said, are you going to take that up? Nope. I said, do you have family out there? Nope. He's from the Midwest. And finally, he decided he was going to live right on the Columbia River in Washington State, which has no state income tax, and cross the river once a week to go into Portland and shop because they have no sales tax. And that's the reason he moved, not for any other reason, but to beat two taxes.
It's all about the taxes. Some people get focused, laser focused.
Unfortunately, and they miss the economics, which is more important. Now, Joe Sullender, again, certified financial planner, vice president with Wells Fargo, and he mentioned starting off with the new year, make sure your assets are positioned properly and balanced. And we've had a nice run up in the market. Things you read seem to indicate the market's going to stay steady or do a little bit better next year. And I never truly, although I'm an accountant, never understood balancing. You know, everything should be put in CDs, and they go, no. They'll bring in another financial planner. But Joe was saying here is make sure you watch your balances, and it's not the same. You just can't put it on automatic pilot anymore. You need to, I think, adjust it probably or look at it twice a year and don't just shut your eyes.
Some say once a year. Some say twice a year. The elephant.
Some say daily.
The compulsive ones.
Right. The L Fund does it four times a year. Every quarter they rebalance slightly, so you'll notice a little more of your money.
Well, actually,
going
every
into the
day
bond.
The L Funds meet their balance. They just rebalance to become more conservative four times a year.
Four times a year, which some of our financial planners say is too frequent.
And I want to get to two other ones, one very quickly, the financial planners. One was Karen Schaefer on the show, and I think, John, you might have been in on this show. And we were talking about the L funds and talking about, well, you maybe should do this or that. And Karen just looked at us like we had lost our mind, and there was a quick phrase. She says, inflation doesn't stop at retirement's door.
Right.
In other words, the
don't
L fund, whatever
it is.
Don't
get all your money out of the stock market.
Yeah, the L income fund is right now, what, about 20% stocks only, and that's probably way too conservative. As Karen has pointed out, you might live to be on, 30, 40 more years in retirement. And most financial planners I've heard say at least 40% in stocks. I think Jerry Canazzaro, one of ours, says 50%.
Well, Jerry's up next, but let's give Karen her props. Karen's a certified financial planner, owns Schaefer Financial with her husband, Rick, does a ton of seminars for us and other folks as well. I'll just never forget. Bob, inflation doesn't stop.
I mean, more and more of us are going to be on Willard Scott Smucker's jars someday.
So. I hope. Maybe all five of us, huh?
Wouldn't that be something?
You up for that, Mike?
I could get on it now. what's the big deal?
All righty. And the last financial comment was from Jerry Canazzaro. I hope I pronounced that right, Jerry. And Jerry's the president of Retirement Planning Services, Inc. And Jerry says, the number one question, should I take a survivor's annuity? And if so, what percentage? Now, you know, remember, we're talking to a group of generally 30, sometimes 50, but generally and probably not more than 70. I mean, how do you know them? And even if you did,
30,
you
50, 70 what?
People.
Age.
People.
Okay.
and 30, 50, 70 age,
yeah,
too.
They're
so,
all different ages,
so you get
all
this question
numbers.
And you go, well, it's pretty hard to do. So Jerry says, when in doubt, we recommend, this is Jerry, a full survivor's annuity be considered for both CSRS and for his retirees. And he goes on to say, we want to see our clients have the relatively same 10% or less of the other one's income while they're living. This assumes a domestic partner or a spouse. And then Jerry goes on to say, and he's got kind of a nice website, not that the other ones don't. They all have websites. And his is www.smartdollars.com. And you can go in there and kind of do projections, as well as, I think, through the thrift, you can go into something called a ballpark estimate. It might not drill down.
It's down right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's got a general one, but it's also got one for feds, as I understand, through
that's
the OPM
site. That's the one
that's
not working right now. Yeah. It's out of commission for the time being.
I don't know how they do that one with all the myriad of retirement
Well, it's
systems.
Pretty basic. It doesn't go into all those details. The other thing I was going to mention on the survivor question, because we get that all the time, don't we, John, about survivor annuity elections for federal couples, or what if my spouse works in the private sector, you know, what
yes,
do you do? And I answer it starting off with a very quick question. I'll say, what would you do, what would your spouse do if you dropped dead the day after you retired? And likewise, what would you do if the same happened to your spouse? So think about what income you would inherit, what life insurance they carry, what, you know, other properties you have, and find out, you know, where the deficit is. Can you still live in the house and pay the taxes if you didn't have a survivor annuity? And some couples will say, yeah, I have enough of my own income. Yeah. I'd be okay.
Yeah, they're looking for a one-size-fits-all answer, and there simply isn't one. And Tammy, of course, is exactly right. I mean, you have to look at your own individual what if.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the traditional stay-at-home spouse and the working husband, you know, the 1935 model, I think with that one, I think 100% without a doubt, leave a full survivor
Absolutely,
annuity.
Absolutely, yeah.
But with working couples today, everybody's situation is different. Everybody's spending habits are different.
Yeah, and even if you, let's say your private sector spouse has this, you know, multimillion dollar 401k, not to mention Social Security, but a lot of money, and say, oh, yeah, I don't need, where's that paper to waive my survivor annuity? You got to think about the health insurance.
Hey, if I dropped dead and didn't leave my husband a dime of survivor annuity, he would have more money. Because I would stop spending at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
true. He'd be just fine. Where on the other hand, if he dropped dead tomorrow, I need all the survivor annuity I can get.
I think Brian knows that.
Oh, he definitely knows that. I'm not giving out any secrets.
He's not listening, is he?
I'll call up and I say, is Tammy there? And he goes, are you kidding? The stores are still open.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little hobby.
All righty. Jerry also went on to talk about that if you make X dollars today, you got to build in inflation, like Karen says as well, so you can work with this website to talk about future projected needs as well as current needs, and you could list your current needs and then project them out to the future. And remember tax. Income doesn't equal spendable income, which brings me to one other thing. TSP, Ed brought this up, and I get this question a lot because I talk about thrift distributions and the options, whether it's monthly or all at once or move it to an IRA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I get a fair number of people that come up and say, listen, I'm looking at going into retirement. I still have some college debt, or I want to pay my mortgage off. I'm going to take the money out of the thrift and do it. And I said, you really ought to think twice about that, because anything that you take out of the thrift is going to be 100% taxable. And whatever tax bracket you're in, federal and state, whether it's 20 or whether it's 33, which would I say be more the norm than not, you're going to lose that much in tax. So in order to pay a $50,000 mortgage off, you might have to take $75,000 out. So I suggest, why don't you do this? One of the options with the thrift is to take monthly payments, which you can control. If I'm not, am I right, Tammy? Mm-hmm. And John, so you can tell them what you want per month, but realize if you have a $500 a month mortgage payment, you're going to have to take out more than $500, but not necessarily all, because the mortgage payment does include some interest, which would reduce the taxation of the thrift. And I said, you might as well do that, because more often than not, even from the sometimes the most conservative viewpoint, you probably make more money in the G than what you're paying on the mortgage if you have a current mortgage. And if you go out of it, which you should, and you shouldn't be 100% in G, then you might likely be making more money on the money in the thrift, so why take it out to pay it off and then lose that huge chunk in cash?
Plus, you keep some leverage by having some of your money in your control rather than
exactly
so having just a house that you have to live in.
Well, I have a question for the tax man. There's going to be a Roth TSP, I guess the ETF.
Next year.
Whatever. I mean, the estimated time of arrival is late next year.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But anyway, it's going to be here, part of the change in the law. And I wrote a really good article a couple of years ago in NARF magazine about the pitfalls of moving money from a tax-deferred IRA or TSP to a Roth.
Right.
And, you know, that it wouldn't, even though Roths are very appealing, and now there are no income limits, so we all can be in them, there are some tax pitfalls from moving, if people next year or 2012 moved their TSP tax deferred account into a Roth. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're absolutely
right.
The
TSP said we won't be able to do that, though. You can't move your existing TSP to the Roth. It's all new contributions.
Or you could move the TSP to a Roth.
You could.
Okay. So you could get the best of the world. You might not get the TSP Roth. But let's just look at it as three boxes. Box one would be the thrift. Box two would be the Roth. And box three would be your cash. Now, if you want to move the money from the thrift, box one, to a Roth, you're going to pay tax on 100% of what you move over. Not 100% tax, but it's all taxable. Where is that money going to come from? Well, there's one place it should not come from, and it should not come from that transfer we just did. It should come from the third pot, your cash. And you say, well, I don't want to give that up. Well, if you don't, then it makes no sense. And then you'd say, okay, well, I do that, but then if I take the money out of my cash stash, then it can't grow as much because I have less there. And the answer is, yeah, that's right. That's why you ought to look for this to be 12 or so years before you touch it. Then you got kind of an opportunity with regards to federal employees. Let's talk about their traditional IRA, which is the fourth box. And you'd say, well, I'd like to move my traditional IRA over to the Roth. Now, the traditional IRA may or may not be fully taxable depending on when the person gets into it. And this gets fairly not so easy to talk about on the air, but not impossible to talk about if you do it with yourself. Some of that money was put in over the years where you did not get a tax deduction. So if you were to move it to a Roth, you shouldn't have to pay tax. You'd only have to pay tax on the amount of money that's accumulated or was put in prior to 1987 when you could get a tax deduction. However, with regards to the thrift, federal employees can have a really nifty opportunity here with their traditional IRAs, where they can take the taxable portion of the traditional IRAs and transfer it to the thrift, which would leave nothing but the non-taxable portion of the IRA to be moved into a Roth. Now, there are certain ordering things and timing of this that are extremely sensitive. So anybody listening to this, don't go racing off and say, boy, look at what I heard on the air. I'm not saying you can't do it, but it requires some planning and forethought. And I just throw it out there. And you could listen to the show that Tammy and I did October 1st this year that's archived on the website. NITP.com. And the entire show is on that subject and others as well.
Yeah, Roth conversions and voluntary contributions.
Yeah, that was a good show.
That was
exhausting,
like a
show.
That was an hour of 101 course material.
And yeah, probably a show that you should not think you're going to listen to for 53 minutes. Take it in pieces.
Take notes.
And
or print out the notes. We had notes to go with that.
Yeah, we had a 26-page or 16-page PDF file, and we actually stopped them at the beginning. Don't listen any further. Print this out first, because we were talking about forms, and it's nice to have the forms in front of
them. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on that show where people have actually done that, and they've learned something from it. So anybody wants to know more about that Roth conversion, you did a good job.
Well, we both did.
Through the voluntary contribution?
Both.
Well, he talked about just regular IRAs and traditional IRAs, and then we moved into voluntary contributions for the second half of the show. But it was good for both.
The first half of the show really was for everyone, including FERS people. The second half of the show was all on voluntary contribution, and the FERS people need not listen because they're just going to get mad. But CSRS or Offset would like the second half, because we talked about the voluntary contribution. That's really sensitive to timing and some other of these ordering issues. But nonetheless, I think we put out the disclaimer, this is accurate, but don't do this without professional advice. And we were not seeking work for us.
Just trying to inform.
Yes.
Educate.
And it's got one of those little thermometer things when you're listening to it. So you say, I didn't understand that. And you can go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Or you could just stop it. Or you can listen to it in the middle of the night. So it's 24/7. You can listen to it. And then if you still don't understand it, within reason, you can email us.
And they do.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we got legal. We got long-term care. We got tax. We got finance. And the thing that probably makes a lot of our seminar spin, certainly on the first day, are benefits. And
what about life after retirement?
Life after retirement.
Yeah, that's my favorite subject.
Me too.
Okay, a thousand pardons. Mike Townsend wrote in, and Mike sent us actually two pages. And the first question he mentioned says, I have already told my fellow employees I don't want a retirement party, so don't schedule it for me. I just don't want to be in the spotlight, and I think it's a waste of time. Am I doing the right thing? And you got to know Michael, because you can kind of hear him go, well, I don't believe there's a right or wrong here. It's diplomatic. But ask yourself the question, who's the party for, really?
Mm-hmm.
Who benefits the most? And this is Michael talking again. He says, in my view, the real beneficiaries of these celebrations are the younger mid-career associates who come to the party to see us off, but who find themselves encouraged to see someone they know graduate. In other words, they're graduating.
I hate to bring this up, but it's the same theory as people who say they don't want a funeral. I mean, who's the funeral really for?
It's not for the dead person.
It's not for the person that died.
You know, I was just thinking that your first funeral in particular, you think you're actually attending two. You're going to theirs, and then you're going to yours. You're saying, no, I went to a colleague at the Washington Post that died very young, and I went, and he had four children. He was 5-6 years older than me. He had four children, and at that point I had two, and I was watching his family grieving and his children there, and I thought, you know, that could be me, and maybe will be someday.
Right.
All righty, Michael, comment number two. Isn't it true, this is from class now, the class member asking the question, isn't it true that I have had a hard time finding a job, I will have a hard time finding a job after I retire because I'm well over 50 and everybody knows that employers prefer younger and cheaper employees? And this is Michael's response. Of course, age basis exists, and there are employers who cautiously or uncautiously prefer to hire younger people. But this is Mike again. But I wouldn't let that stop me. Here's why. For as many employers who will discriminate, there are just as many or more who will see this as a proven talent who has stood the test of time. Now,
That's why they made Grecian formula.
Is that it?
Well, you know, really, with a government worker, government workers don't realize sometimes their value. If you retire from the government at 55, 56, which is much younger than the private sector, if you've got a top secret security clearance and you've got health insurance, you are a dream come true when you walk through that door.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes, I, you know, as an employer of not a ton, but I look at that. Somebody comes in and they're either covered under a spouse's or they don't need it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And the older, you know, they're going to show up for work. You know that they appreciate it more now. You know, Mike and I might be the senior members of the group here, but
I think John's a close second.
I am second to Mike.
Okay, I'm third.
Thank goodness. I hope I don't last.
It's just John's youthful look.
Except for Tammy.
You're
all
much
pretty
younger
clustered.
Than I am.
Well, Mike's got a big lead, but
okay.
Three of us are clustered.
Mike's got a big lead.
Let's move forward. And this is Michael Townsend said.
But thank you all, by the way.
Michael looks younger than the rest of us. He said, why are so many, what employers actually hire or prefer to hire older workers? And Michael suggests that one looks at the ARP website and they run a list of employers that favor more seasoned person. And then the last one, he says, this is again a question from class. My spouse and I are both in our mid-50s. We are very concerned about the care options for both our set of parents as well as them. Any recommendations about how we can learn to be appropriate and helpful in this difficult period? And Michael points out a book by Barbara Silverstone called You and Your Aging Parents. It's published by Oxford Press. And he feels that that's really... Mike is a... What do you call a voracious reader? Is that the right term?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if he is or not, but
he is.
If he is, it's the right term.
Yeah. Anyway, so those are Michael's, and he does the transition part, and that's again.
I like
he also
website.
Recommended us a website called caregiver.com, which I've gone to. I find that very helpful,
that's,
too.
I'm glad to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. And his website is mybestdayistoday.com. Isn't that good? That. I like that.
Yeah.
He's
unfortunately,
positive guy.
When Tammy and I do seminars, we do the benefits part, so we never get to hear Michael Townsend and other people. So we kind of, you know, if we're lucky enough, and I consider it lucky, if we're not on the first day, unfortunately, normally we are, so we don't hear from the class even. But
right. I think, to me, that's more important than the finance.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on my dad's experience, because he was kind of forced into retirement, being his company went out of business. And I think he wasn't prepared mentally, which really caused his health decline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had the money to pay the bills. That wasn't the problem. It was the not knowing what to do with that extra 50 hours a week.
Same thing with my dad. Mm-hmm. He was died 4 years later.
Yeah, because we think, oh, man, I can hardly wait to have that extra time. But that's a lot of hours to fill.
Yeah, idleness never bothered me, but it does bother other people.
And there's another Michael, Dr. Michael Creedon, and I remember him on the show most vividly. And he talked about a glide path to retirement. Work on skills or something that you like. And I looked at Michael and I said, you know, I really like to play basketball. Do you think I could get in the NBA? And he looked me dead in the eyes, kind of like Karen. He goes, are you kidding? For many reasons. And I go, oh, okay, well.
I think the other thing, too, they're not using the term retire in some of those circles. They're using the term rewire. And I kind of like that because it's like, yeah, you got to start anew, start something fresh.
Plan A and a plan B, sometimes plan C.
That's right. Have a backup plan.
Yep.
Okay, benefits. We'd be here for next week with all that.
That's why I thought you better save that for last.
Okay, Tammy, you and John. Why don't we do John? John had a one. Where is John's? John's
I'm right here.
Is on page on page three. The best question I ever had. You say it, John. It's on page three of the white pages.
Yeah, it wasn't phrased as a question, but some. Woman in the class asked about reemployed annuitants, and I was explaining a salary offset, and also you could get a waiver salary offset. And I got through that, and one guy raised his hand and said, you know, it seems illogical that, you know, military retirees can retire, get full military retired pay, come to work for the federal government without any offset to salary, but yet, at least potentially, in many cases, federal employees have their salary offset if they return to government after retirement. And he said, that just doesn't seem logical to me. And I said, so far in the seminar, have I said anything that seems logical to you? And that brings up a point, because a lot of what Tammy and I talk about isn't based on logic. It's based on law, and Congress. It's made by our members of Congress. And so just like the tax code,
I was going to say, don't
it's
feel
not
like
logical.
The Lone Ranger or the Lone Rangeress.
It's most of what we talk about makes no sense at all, even to us. We
all
just
right.
know the facts. But let's
another point to that, excuse me, is that the Dual Compensation Act was repealed in 1964, and then they've changed it some since. But somebody, a very high official at Office of Personnel Management, after he retired, he told me, he said in his tenure there, and I think he'd been at OPM and Civil Service Commission for 30 years, but he said he never saw a retirement change come through the Congress that didn't benefit a particular individual. This may be a staffer, maybe a member of Congress. In this case, this may have been somebody's favorite retired general, and they waived the dual compensation. So John is exactly right. It's the difference between the law and justice. Justice is justice.
Well, why do you
the
think CSRS employees can retire the first, second, or third day of the month?
Exactly, right. Exactly, for that very reason.
That was
yeah.
another
and
special
every,
exception.
Everything they've done, everything they do is to benefit a particular individual,
yeah,
often
the,
themselves.
And the change in the redeposit law in 1990 was to mm-hmm. benefit
oh,
a member of Congress.
By 3 months, yep.
Yeah, and then they upped it to March 1st, 91.
That's another mm-hmm. story.
Yeah, that is a total.
You can see it in the tax, too. There used to be, it was called the crazy cousin law, and some congressperson had a crazy cousin, and they could claim them as an exemption, even though they might have money, and but if they were crazy, they took it out of the law. And then there's another one, even with the thrift today, there's if you take all the money out of the thrift all at once, which would seem crazy because you get racked with taxes, but there's a special provision to pay very little tax on. It's called 10-year averaging. It's got nothing to do with 10 years, but it basically chops your tax rate in half if you take all the money out. But your birth date has to be before January 2nd, 1936. So,
before.
Some people call that the Claude Pepper Rule, if you all remember Claude
what
Pepper.
What was his birthday again? Yeah. Yeah, right. I think I know.
And so eventually, nobody qualifies for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see it, and you all see a lot more than I do, but let's do some more. Tammy?
As far as questions
Benny,
go?
Benny's question.
Okay. Well, there's one that comes up recently, because we have a lot of people who are hanging on a little longer before they retire, and some people are looking at springtime retirements or summertime retirements where they want to maximize the tax benefits of working before they retire, which means putting in the $16,500 to the thrift, the $5,500 catch-up, the flexible spending account. But the one thing I warn people to be careful about, when it comes to maxing out the thrift, if you do a dollar amount, like if you say, I'm going to work six pay periods into 2011, so I'll just take the 16,500 and divide it by six, and I'll put that in each pay period, so I'll have taken the full tax advantage of the thrift before I retire. Well, if that 1/6 of that 16,500 is more than your paycheck amount, if it even exceeds it by $20, you're not going to have any TSP deduction that pay period. So make sure that you're still allowing for your health insurance, your life insurance, your retirement contributions before you figure out how much you're going to be putting in the thrift plan out of that paycheck. I would recommend doing a percentage rather than a dollar amount, because a percentage is a little more flexible, and you may not miss out on the contribution. Did you ever see that in the code, John, about that fine-tuning thing? If you put a dollar amount that's too high that can't be deducted, payroll won't take anything out.
Oh, yeah, I knew that was a rule. Yeah, that's nothing new.
Some people get caught on that.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife, who retired last March 3rd, did fund the $22,000 mm-hmm. before she left, but didn't miss any of it because
right.
she had it covered. Yeah. No, we were aware of that,
mm-hmm.
or she was when I explained it to her. But something you got to watch for.
Right. Bob
Braunstein just. To get Bob in because he was kind enough to send us in, and it's page 5 and 6. And Bob says, will my permanently disabled child be able to continue enrollment as a dependent under federal employees' health care benefits beyond his or her 26th birthday, even if I'm no longer alive? And Bob says, the answer is, if your child's disability began prior to the age of 18, enrollment under federal employees' health benefits will continue as long as a family member is enrolled either as an employee or a retiree and is receiving a monthly annuity from OPM. Right, Tammy?
That's right.
Right, Bob? Thanks, Bob. And then Bob had some thoughts on a smoother transition into retirement, and he had three paragraphs, but I love the last sentence. If possible, try not to plan for your retirement by yourself. Talk to somebody you trust and understand it along with others and financial conditions and how it would impact the others. So.
Not least your spouse. I know some financial planners who said several times that the husband and wife will come in and the husband will say, yeah, we're going to retire. I'm going to retire in March and we're moving to Florida and I'm opening up an alligator skinning plant. And the woman looks at him and she's never heard this before. They've been married 40 years and she's never heard that plan.
And he's had that plan all along. Mm-hmm. Never shared it with her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were the ones that didn't listen to our spouses, the males. Is that right, Ann?
Afraid so.
I can't imagine.
I listen to mine.
Okay, Tammy.
Well, the one question that comes up a lot is how long will it take to get my first check? You know, what's the process of retiring? And you know, it starts with you, really, as the employee. You have to apply, you have to plan, you have to prepare. And I think that really starts with understanding your benefits, maybe attending a seminar, maybe getting a retirement estimate from your agency. So let's say you've done all of that. Now you're setting the date. Maybe you're going to retire February 28th. So if you're planning to retire February 28th, when would you put your application in, John?
Well, that varies. It depends on what your agency says. When I, agencies I worked for, we said 30 to 45 days before you retire was sufficient.
That's pretty standard. Yeah, it's pretty standard.
Well,
some will say 60 to 90.
But it seems to be getting longer and longer.
Yeah. There's one agency I go to that says you can put it in a year ahead of time.
Well,
I think that's overkill.
I think some DOD installations I've heard from seminars I do at DOD that they want them 6 months before retirement.
Yeah,
date.
It depends on, I think the larger the agency, the more notice it's in your best interest to
give.
You
need to check with your HR office or whatever. We used to call
and
them personnel
tell you.
Offices.
They'll tell you real quick.
They'll tell you. And now, you got to understand that if you decide not to retire, you're fully within your right to pull.
Right. It's a voluntary action.
It's a voluntary application.
Now, do you do it well in advance? So, as I understand it from listening to y'all, it's a two-step dance. The paperwork has to be done at the agency level before it goes to OPM.
Well, there's another step in between.
Three steps.
Well, you have to turn it into your, as John said, what we used to call our personnel office. It's now called, what's it called?
Human capital. Human resources, human capital.
HCAST.
There are all sorts of strange names.
Right, but it's the people who handle benefits in your agency, the retirement specialists. And so those are the folks who are going to break down your personnel records, get your health insurance, your life insurance, your beneficiary designations, get all of that ready in a package, which it's a paper package, not an electronic file, gets that ready to send to OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, who's going to finalize the claim. But before the whole thing can get really processed, payroll has a role in it. Because your payroll office is who takes you off the payroll. They have to pay your last paycheck, your lump sum annual leave check, close out your retirement record at the agency, and then they have to send information to OPM. So now, once OPM's received the case, which is generally within 2 weeks in a good situation.
Yeah, the Congress mandated years ago that agencies had to get the stuff to OPM within 30 days, but I understand they're beating that by quite a wide margin.
Yeah, because a lot of that does go electronically with the payroll information.
Yeah.
You know, there's another end to that too. The other end is when do you get your check? And I have gotten emails now from four different people who inquired of OPM, and they said they were told, and they've sent me the wording, count on 6 months to a year before you get a full check.
Well, here's from John Barry, OPM director, said this was last week, or no, this was last month in November. He said 25,460 of the 38,000 backlog cases OPM is still trying to calculate. Said 23%, or over almost 9,000 retirees, have been waiting less than a month. 1% have been waiting a year or more, and everybody else is kind of in between, as you're saying, like 6 months to
a
year.
My spouse, who spent about 14 years at OPM, waited 6 months before I finally put the hammer down and called.
And got somebody action.
Yeah.
A part of this is dealing with the volume of work OPM is doing, and they don't have enough trained specialists. But I always tell employees there's a little role you can play in this as well, because if your case goes to OPM and it's very clear and there's no question on your service records and everything's been well documented, it's going to go a little smoother once it gets over there than if there's missing records or something's not there.
To the TSP.
Okay.
You had a comment on page two about you heard Greg Long speak at a quarterly meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about most of those people would probably not participate in the thrift if the automatic enrollment were not created. And then Greg made some comments, and I think you have them quoted there, Tammy.
Well, this all goes back to a change in a law that occurred this year that required agencies, when they hire new employees now, instead of letting it up to the employee to decide to contribute to the thrift, new hires now will have 3% or are having 3% of their pay withheld and deposited to a TSP account in the G Fund. And because of that automatic enrollment that's been happening since August of 2010, they've seen a jump of about 1% in participation rates, which is pretty significant considering there haven't been that many new hires since August. So it is showing some increase to the participation rate, because right now, among the civilian employees, the participation rate for FERS, and I guess for all employees, is 83.5%, which means 16.5 out of 100 employees are not contributing to the thrift. So this is boosting that participation rate and getting more people involved. Because I think a lot of times new hires, as we all do, we procrastinate. And so there's some procrastination that's now being avoided because of this automatic enrollment.
Okay, we're going to bring this down to a slow landing here. Ann, comment?
I do have a comment. Are you surprised? No.
No, I'm not.
If people out there have not attended a retirement planning seminar, I urge them to go to their HR office and ask if one's being held. And if not, please give me a call at 703-715-0620 or email us at nitpinc.com or info at Okay, I'm speeding up. Or if you have comments on the radio show, too, it's for your benefit at nitpinc.com.
You do a much better job of that than I. Tammy?
Just keep on top of things and learn all you can.
John?
Merry Christmas.
Whoa, and Happy New Year.
That's right.
I just say buckle your seatbelts. I'm not in the business of being an alarmist, but this anti-government mood, particularly against state and local governments, but seems to be picking up steam.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I just want to say thanks. 5 years, couldn't do it without you all. 28 years ago, it started not even a dream. Tom O'Rourke put me on the air 30 years ago. Mike put us on the air. The agencies that hire us and the people that come, and 40 people that make it work, including the admin staff. Thank you.
For your benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted